Hello, welcome
Hi.
to PB&J Podcast, where Brianna is now a forgotten child of sorts.
And forgot about me.
I did. I was doing homework, but it was test corrections. But I did forget a little bit, but not a lot. Actually,
just a little bit.
A lot. It was a bit.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I can't. I'm deaf. Nothing wrong with being deaf. Sorry.
Okay.
I am partially deaf, actually.
So you have something crazy?
Shoot, your brother's asleep, isn't he?
No.
Oops. Oh. Never mind.
Can you hear something crazy?
Do I?
This is the last of this month's theme. Until we move on to next.
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah. First theme month. How are you guys liking it? Second theme month.
No, it's the first.
Oh, first theme month. How are we liking it? How is it treating y'all? Is it good? I hope so, because if it's not, sorry.
Tough luck.
I don't think we've had our annual business meeting.
No, not since January.
Not since January. February. But we figured out everything we need to figure out.
Yeah, maybe in 6 months we'll reevaluate.
Yeah, I think we just have to reevaluate every year.
March?
I think it will be literally annually. Because annually means yearly, and I do realize that I used that incorrectly.
April 22nd, I believe, is actually our 1 year anniversary of starting the podcast.
Oh, yes. Yes,
so we have to plan something special.
We could have an hour-long episode, because that's as long as it'll go. Or we could put two out in 1 week.
Ooh, we could do that.
But that would be a lot of work on me. Yeah. I'm kidding. That's not that much work on me. That's more work on you. But
yeah, my son is
shut up.
Okay.
Shut up, you dumb butt.
Do you want to hear what we're doing today?
Is it murder? Well, we're not obviously murdering.
Well, no, it's not. Nothing at all. Nothing violent.
Nothing violent. We never do anything violent.
When have we done
it's
that?
It's so boring, you know? It's the same thing every day. We just, you know, we talk about nothing. We've never talked about a murderer, ever.
Nope.
That's
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, that's not like our whole podcast's about murder.
Nope.
Yeah. We've totally never talked about
never.
Murder.
Never.
We're holy children. We're children
very,
of the Lord.
Very much so.
Y'all don't get why that's so funny. And you're not going to. Inside
joke. You don't need to know.
You don't need to know. Our personal business.
So, I think this is interesting. For some reason, I think this case is very much like the Hi-Fi murders, which we did the first week of this month.
Yeah.
So kind of ending it with something kind of similar. Similar.
Similar. Similar.
It's been a long day. I didn't drink any coffee. I'm tired.
Yeah, I never drink any coffee. Coffee's nasty. Sorry to all the coffee lovers. Oh, I think we found our first coffee lover. Her name may or may not be Brianna.
Maybe.
Something wolf.
It's that's my new name.
Oh, Brianna, I shouldn't give them your full name, should I?
I don't care.
So they can go stalk you.
I have nothing to hide. Okay, so
you sure about that?
I'm sure. I have a boring voice.
What?
I'm boring.
That sounded like you said something way different. If you thought she said something way different, go follow us on our Instagram at PB&J,
where we post every time we upload.
And if you didn't, also go follow us on PB&J because we have 40 followers and it's kind of sad.
Also, rate and review our podcast because
you can do that.
That's it. Yeah.
Oh,
I
rated
ours a 5 stars. Okay, so
ours is a 5-star podcast.
I mean, I rated it that whether it is or not.
Maybe I should check on that one.
Anyway, so today we're going to be talking about the Austin Yogurt Shop murders.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. It'll make you never want to go to a Froyo shop again.
Yeah, was it I went to a Froyo shop today.
Lucky. I didn't.
There was a meeting there. It was, so, you know how all Froyo places are, like, you know, religious?
No.
Oh, yeah, Sweet Frog's religious. The one down here is religious. Every place is religious.
Not all of them.
Probably. I don't know. Anyways, here, we should probably get onto the case.
Yeah. Okay, so we should probably put our warnings in here.
Yeah, rape, murder, whatever, whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, really? That's exactly. Gore descriptions.
Yeah. Everything. I like how you just know the drill wanna... now. Like, you know the drill now.
I haven't heard the case yet, but I'm
you just know. Assuming. You just know.
I just know.
Okay, so today, like I said, we're going to talk about the Austin Yogurt Shop murders. This takes place in Austin, Texas, back in 1991.
Austin, Texas.
You know what I'm going to do?
Sorry,
I'm
to like, any of our Texans.
I'm going to print out a map and start marking off every place we've done a story on. That way I don't just, like, this is our first case in blank, blank, blank.
This is our first case that I know of in Texas, though.
I think it is. I don't know. We say it all the time. We probably shouldn't say that unless we know for sure. Anyway, so Austin wasn't really high in crime at the time. That was until four teenage girls were murdered at the I Can't Believe It's Yogurt frozen yogurt shop.
Dun, dun, dun.
So glad you did it because I was going to. So this case is actually still unsolved to this day.
Oh, damn.
Like, those stories really bother me because I just want to know what happened.
Eh.
Anyway, so even though it is unsolved, it did lead to arrests.
Okay, but, like, they didn't... Like, do they think they have the guy in custody or the girl in custody?
Well, you'll see. You'll see.
Never okay, so assume.
The story starts on December 6th, 1991, when...
1991.
When Eliza Thomas, Sarah Harbinson, Jennifer Arvinson and Amy Ayers were brutally murdered.
I'm sorry, those are some of the most basic names I've ever heard.
It's 1991,
Jocelyn. I mean,
I'm sorry
you got murdered and all, but those are pretty basic.
Jesus, Jocelyn.
I love you guys, because, well, I don't know you, but if I did know you, I'm sure you're very nice people.
I'm sure.
It's just you sound like the popular kids, like the popular basic girls. I'm sorry you got murdered. I really am. It must have been pretty hard for you.
Oh.
I mean, it probably was pretty painful.
I mean, I'm sure.
But I don't know. I've never been murdered.
I would really hope not. Otherwise, who the heck am I talking to?
Me, the murderer. I'm kidding.
So, me. Eliza and Jennifer were both 17. And they had been the only ones working that night at the store, which is
oh,
a little strange.
Oh, wait, they were working there?
Yes. That's why I said kind of like the hi-fi shop, but people just kept showing up. So,
oh, jeez.
Sarah.
St. Patrick's Day.
Sarah, Jennifer's 15-year-old sister, and their friend Amy, who is 13, Jennifer
Amy's
had picked them
basic.
Up. Jennifer had picked them up from the mall that was like across the street from this place and went over to
nice.
The store to help Eliza close up.
Actually not nice. Maybe we should rethink this one, guys. Maybe we should just go home.
Well, they didn't get a chance to.
Oh, that was a little rude, Brianna. Don't
I'm
you
just
think?
Being honest.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so
what is talking in the background?
My TV.
Okay.
Don't worry, I don't have Nirvana playing this time.
Mm-hmm.
So, close
yeah, we
to
got
midnight.
Copyrighted. I'm kidding. We
no,
did
we
not
didn't.
Copyrighted.
Close to midnight that night, Sergeant John Jones
Damn.
Would arrive. Wait till you see the names later. You'll die. Anyway, so he would arrive at the yogurt shop responding to a call after a patrolling officer spotted smoke and then flames coming from the shop.
Wait, what kind of shop was this?
A yogurt. Froyo. Jones was the only homicide detective out that night, and by total coincidence, he had a news crew with him.
What?
That was doing like a ride-along.
Wait,
so,
what? This is planned.
No, it's not. It was total coincidence. So the dispatcher on the call told him there was two fatalities, suspected arson, suspected homicide, and looked like gunshot wounds.
God damn.
So soon another call came in. They found another body.
Oh my God.
Jones said in all his 21 years as a police officer, he had never seen anything like this.
Well, I'd hope not.
All four girls, Eliza, Jennifer, Sarah, and Amy, were found dead in the back of the yogurt shop, shot execution style in the back of the head with a 22 caliber.
My God.
Like, holy crap.
Somebody was real angry.
Good point, Jocelyn. So
did they have, like, ex-boyfriends that were, like, angry or something? Like, what the
fuck? I don't know. It's unsolved.
Wow.
How do you expect me to know this?
I don't know. I think you're a homicide detective, apparently.
We can pretend. That'd be fun. That'd be a fun job, honestly. Not for the whole murder aspect.
I don't know. For, like... I think that would be a pretty depressing, upsetting.
Well, I like detective work. I think it's fun. I mean, that's why I like this. Anyway.
How much more minutes of this case, BT Dubs?
A while. I just started.
Oh, shoot.
So.
My phone's gonna die.
Plug it in.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
All of them had been gagged except for Amy. Where was I?
Oh. Amy Winehouse.
We're not talking about Amy Winehouse. No, it is not. So Sarah and Eliza had their hands bound behind their back. They were all found naked and burnt.
God dang!
Well, I mean, they were set on fire. Did you expect them not to be burnt?
I don't know. Why was this man or woman so angry?
I don't know.
Assuming.
Some people just get bored and go kill people, I guess. I don't know.
That's not a good trait to have.
No, if you if you're bored, like, go watch a movie or something. God.
Yeah. I mean, if you really need to watch something about murder, just, or need to do
go
something.
Go watch some Scream.
Yeah. Exactly. Or just don't murder, you know?
Yeah. Anyway, so 15-year-old Sarah was found on her back, her hands tied behind her back, her legs spread, and a scoop of ice cream was on the floor between her thighs. Which is just so
weird. That seems so uncomfortable.
She's dead, Jocelyn. I don't think
she
knows.
I don't care. I wouldn't want to be lying in a pile of ice cream if I were dead. Well, like, no, I'd be, like, cold. I mean, I'd already be cold because, like, I'm dead, you know, like, no blood circulation.
You don't have feelings. You'd be dead.
But my soul might still, like, you know?
Anyway, so 17-year-old Eliza was stacked on top of Sarah.
Eliza!
With her hands bound behind her back. 17-year-old Jennifer laid less than 3 feet away from them. She was burned worse than all of them.
Why?
I don't know. She just got burnt, man.
Oh.
13-year-old Amy was found face down in another area of the back room as if she had tried to crawl away.
Oh.
Where was I? Okay. So. When the firefighters put out the fire, they hadn't realized it was, like, a, you know, a big crime scene where a murder had taken place.
Oh.
So they had actually washed away most of the evidence.
No! God dang it. You little bungalow bite nuggets.
The bodies were so burnt, you could hardly tell they were bodies. Like, you know, you could hardly differentiate them.
Like, they were ashes, almost? Or, like,
well, they were burnt, so crispy burned, bodies.
They looked like...
Oh, they just like looked like the rest of the ash in
like
the
a burnt crispy pig, like on a fire, or like
that sounds really good.
That does not sound really good. We're talking about like dead bacon. Burnt humans.
I'm talking about pig, like bacon.
Well, I guess I did bring a pig into this one.
Exactly. I'm not gonna eat a human. I'm not a cannibal.
Pigs are very cute. I'm not trying to be rude. Pigs are adorable. Taste good.
So the
in other news, my grandparents got to meet baby goats today. Continue.
Aww.
Yeah.
Crime scene analysts testified that there was evidence that the girls were forced to undress themselves since their clothes were not torn and were actually neatly stacked.
But why?
I don't know. I think that's at least your concern at that time. But, I mean, I don't know.
It might be a pretty big concern because, like, are you going to get murdered or are you going to get, like, you know?
Well, no. I think we know where this is going.
Well, I don't.
Jocelyn, I already told you they were all dead.
Well, yeah, they're dead. But did they get, like...
I'm getting there. Okay. Hey, you're the one that said the warnings.
Yeah, I know. I said them pretty casually, too.
Yeah, and they were all correct. Really? You just know the deal at this point. Okay, so... Their clothing, though, did have cuts on them, which does come into play later.
Like, cuts like cow cuts? Like, with scissors? Or, like, cuts like...
I don't know. Probably from a knife or something.
Okay.
So, Sarah and Eliza and Jennifer had been gagged with items of their clothing.
Like, socks or, like...
I don't know. I wasn't there.
Okay. Apparently Brianna doesn't know the answers to my questions.
No, I don't. Sarah and Eliza were bound and then raped. And God Eliza damn. Was first and then Sarah. Sarah, Jennifer, and Eliza were lying face down when they were shot. They believe Amy was the last killed. Aww. And she had also been sexually assaulted. She was the youngest out of the three. She was 13, I think.
Aww, poor little one.
The oldest one was 17, and then there was a 15-year-old.
Oh.
And no idea where it was. Oh, she was then strangled by a piece of cloth that was found tied around her neck, and she'd been shot with a .22 like the others, but it didn't kill her, so they shot her with the .380 to the side of the head, which did kill her. Did anybody survive? No. Not at all.
Wait, so... Okay.
Yeah. So, we can't know...
How do they know they came straight from the mall and weren't with, like, a boyfriend or, like...
There was, like, people that, you know, saw them and stuff. Not the murder, but...
Yeah.
We can't know for sure what happened, and there were several different versions, but the theory was that after the girl had been killed, the killers stacked the four bodies... covered them with lighter fluid and set them on fire and left.
Damn.
Jennifer Whoa. Had fallen from the firefighters' actions. You know, the hoses are pretty strong.
Yeah.
And somehow it appeared that
Jennifer
Amy...
wasn't dead yet?
No, she was. She just happened to fall off the stack of bodies.
Oh. Okay.
And it appeared that Amy had, like, crawled away before she had died. But the most believable theory is that she was dragged by someone.
Oh.
Because, I mean, she was pretty dead. I don't think she would have been crawling.
Yeah. Shot in the head 12.
Yeah.
Head once. We've seen before. Eh, you might survive.
She was strangled and shot in the head twice. I don't think she was going anywhere. And then she was also lit on fire.
Yeah.
So, just saying. Anyway. Around 8 that night is when Jennifer arrived to help Eliza close the store. Around 9, she went to the mall to pick up Sarah and Amy, and they stopped to get pizza and then went to the shop.
Oh.
Sarah and Amy sat in a booth with their pizza while Jennifer and Eliza were closing down the store. People remember seeing the two girls in a booth. I spelled booth wrong. I forgot the extra O. They were eating pizza early in the night, but closer to closing time, they didn't see them. The pizza box was found in the back room, so it's assumed that they brought the pizza back there while the store was closing.
Oh.
So, when Jennifer had arrived with Sarah and Amy, Eliza had actually been on the phone with her younger sister, telling her to ride her bike over, but her parents wouldn't let her, which is a very good thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
imagine
we know how the night
two ended. Kids, let alone one.
Yeah. I mean, that did happen. Jennifer and Sarah were siblings.
Yeah.
Let me get water. Hold up.
I mean, like, I don't have children, obviously, but, like...
Well, I would hope you tell me.
Yeah.
You hide them from
I
me?
If I did, I don't... I'm kidding. If I did, it... I don't think I would, you know? I mean, I think that's, like, a parent's worst nightmare.
Well, yeah, I mean, no one wants to hear that.
Yeah.
Throughout the night, the parents of the girls had actually popped in and gotten yogurt, which is so sad to think that was the last time they saw them.
Yeah. Well, at least they maybe probably weren't on bad terms, though.
I would hope not. I mean, who would be mad at buying Froyo? I mean, apparently the murderers were, but...
Well, yeah.
Customers that came in close to closing said they noticed some suspicious people coming to the shop.
Oh.
One woman said she saw two boys around the ages of 14 to 17. They were the only other people in the shop when she walked in around 8:30. She said they made her feel, quote-unquote, uncomfortable.
Oh.
They were sitting at the table closest to the door, not eating anything, just focused on a sack they had sitting on the table. That's a little sketchy. The woman said that whatever was in the sack made a clinking sound, kind of like marbles hitting each other, or coins, or keys.
Or guns.
Quite possibly. A couple that came in about 10:45 said they saw two suspicious men that could have been teenagers sitting in the booth closest to the cash register. This is who I think did it. Just saying, this is my viewpoint. This is who I think did it.
Okay.
So they were not eating anything and were the only other people in the shop. At this point, the girls had started stacking chairs, including machines. Police found the chairs stacked on the table. However, the chairs closest to the register, where they would have been sitting, were not stacked. So that means they clearly did not leave. The girls did not have a chance to clean that table. Mm. So everything had been cleaned. The chairs had been stacked. The napkins restocked.
Are they the same guys?
Table. I don't know. But I mean, it just makes sense that they were the ones that did it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but if they're the same guys that were focused on the bag.
Yeah. But what we don't know. Maybe one day we will, but... normally, 10 minutes before 11, they locked the front door from the inside and turned the open sign to close and leave the key in the lock. The police found the door locked with the key still in it, either meaning the girls locked the door while the killers were inside, or they went in through the back door, which was left open at the scene. Imagine, that's just so scary to think about.
Yeah.
Just like, oh my god, imagine locking yourself in a room with a murderer. Ugh. Anyway, so normally after locking the door, they would put the money in a safe in the office and clean up. And once they were done, they'd take the key in the and lock the store from the outside, put the key in an envelope, and slide it under the door.
God, that's really a lot.
But this obviously did not happen. At 11:03, Eliza rang up the last transaction of the night, which was a no-sale transaction, and police would also discover $540 missing from the store.
Ooh.
Police believe someone entered with intentions to rob the store. Others believe that it could have been a known serial killer or someone pretending to be him.
Yeah.
I actually looked into the serial killer, and we will be covering him at some point. It's very interesting.
Okay.
So, Austin was a safe place, you know, other than the murderer.
Yeah.
Other than that random serial killer, we don't talk about him. And no one really expected something so terrible to happen. Mm-hmm. Billboards were put up with the girls' pictures on it, with the headlines, "Who killed these girls?" And their pictures on it. Thousands of tips came in, and their suspect list kept getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
This is actually, they really should have paid more attention to this, but they didn't. I don't think they really cared much about it. The manager of the shop said that her... That was scared the crap out of me. Jackson, go. So the manager said that her and Jennifer had received harassing phone calls at work and at home.
Mm-hmm.
So in her apartment had actually been robbed in a very creepy way, which I'm not going to go into details just because it creeps me out too much. But there was also there was actually a knife left in her apartment.
Oh.
And it really stuck out to her when she heard about the cuts on the girl's clothing. So she told police about the crawl space above the shop that connected the store to others, you know, because the shop was in a strip mall.
Yeah.
So she said that they heard noises up there. And one night, she found shoe prints on a toilet seat with a ceiling tile above it moved out of place.
Oh, my.
Which is weird to me that she would let these two young girls close up the store by themselves when there's literally a person living in your ceiling.
Well, I guess she wouldn't know. It was just suspicious.
I don't know, but I still would have been like, I was thinking I would have left someone. I think I would have had someone else working. Especially if it was like 11 or 12.
Closed myself or been with the girls when it. But yet again, what are you going to do? Get murdered too? I mean, that's just an...
I don't know.
Anyway. I guess there are so many ways to look at it, though.
So there had also been a known serial killer in the area, like I mentioned.
Yeah.
Kenneth McDuff. He had killed 3 people and was given the death penalty. Nickname? I don't know.
Okay.
But in the early 70s, the death penalty was ruled unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So his death sentence was commuted to a life sentence in 1972. However, in 1989, he was paroled and went on to kill 5 more people. However, some people believe it could have been closer to 100 people. So, another lead the police had were 2 Mexican nationals who had confessed to the murders while in a Mexican prison. It was proven that they didn't do it, though. They were, like, having, like, chili pepper or something put in their nose or eyes or something.
Oh.
You know, kind of just like, you know what I mean? There's a lot of false confessions in here. Okay,
why would you want to
say confess to something you didn't do? So, it's really, they kind of like push on interrogations for so long, they torture you for so long. Jackson disappear. A detective who had always gotten confessions from people, even if they didn't commit the crime, he had actually put away 2 guys before that didn't commit a crime. One of them got beaten so bad in prison that he had long-lasting damage. It's a crazy story. We're not going to get into that. He interrogated Sean Smith, an inmate in jail. He interrogated him in a room alone with no recording device for 6 hours. And suspicious. Walked out with a signed statement. I think you, like, don't you have to record?
Yeah, now you do, but this was
1991.
30 years ago.
As they were about to do a polygraph on him, he said he did not commit the crime. They did the test anyway, and it was determined he did not do it. There was a lot of details that were accurate, however. This told police that too much information was getting out.
Yeah.
And they would have a hard time deciphering a true confession to a false confession. Maybe the detective was telling Smith the details. We won't know, though, since there was no recording. This detective dude is really sketchy, by the way. What was his name? Palongo or something? I don't remember. But anyway. A month later, another guy confessed after spending time with the same detective, once again, in a room with no recording device.
Yeah.
8 days into the investigation, police heard about a 16-year-old named Maurice Pierce, who had been picked up by police a few blocks away from the yogurt shop, carrying a .22 caliber.
Well, that's a red flag.
During questioning, Pierce said he had lent the gun to his friend, Forrest Wellborn, who was 15. He said that Forrest had used the gun to commit the murders. Forrest denied any involvement and told investigators that him and Pierce and some friends, Robert Springsteen and Michael Scott, great name, by the way, had went to San Antonio in a stolen SUV not long after the crime. This is actually when he brought up the other 2 guys to the police and really caused some problems for them down the road. So the police were unable to match the bullets at the crime scene to Pierce's gun. But doesn't mean that that gun wasn't used, you know, because those bullets could easily have gotten damaged.
Yeah. Well, anyway, obviously, they were probably semi, maybe not melted. But, like, you know, they did hit bodies.
After a while, though, they dismissed Pierce as a suspect. Fast forward 3 years, and there had been no breaks in the case. The case went cold, but they had done everything they could with the, you know, the equipment they had and stuff.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of stuff was destroyed at the crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
So, fast forward another year or two. There's another detective named Paul Johnson. He decides to look into the case. Swanson. He works on this. Paul Johnson.
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
You didn't get my joke.
I didn't even hear you.
Oh.
He works on this for nearly 2 years. Maurice Pierce really jumped out at him. He stuck out since he had the same gun. But others on the list also had that gun. And it was, I mean, .22 calibers are pretty common. So
found walking with it.
Yeah, but we'll get into why I don't think it was him later. So Johnson began to look into Pierce and his friends again. Out of the four, Pierce was the only one who had gotten into trouble with the law before. You know, just for simple things, fights, trespassing, nothing like the crimes that happened at the yogurt shop. In the original 1992 investigation, Pierce said Forrest was probably the one who killed the girls. So the police tried to get him to get a confession out of Forrest, you know, wired him up and everything. But Forrest had no idea what Pierce was talking about. Pierce started crying, saying he was scared he was going to get in trouble for murder he didn't commit. And just watch this. Forrest said he was as well. Then they both argued over who was more scared.
What?
Like, what the
Okay, heck? This bigger just issues. Seems like psychopathic behavior.
So in 1997, they were all around 21 to 23, and none of them were friends any longer. They had all dropped out of high school, and only one of them had gotten a GED. Police called in Pierce first. He made a statement saying Forrest had borrowed his gun, and he had wondered if he had killed the girls. Okay. He said he was very nervous. What?
Somebody has killed someone. I feel like that's when you go to the police instead of, you know, for a crime you may or may not have been part of.
Yeah. So Pierce said he was very nervous back in the 1991 interrogation, and he was trying to say anything that would get him out of the police, you know, line of whatever. So the police then went on to Forrest, who said he did not remember the night of the murders, but figured he was probably at the mall since he was there a lot. And probably with Pierce, because that was who he hung out with. He denied any involvement, and he passed a polygraph. But they still suspected him. Then Springsteen and Scott were called, but offered no information. Later, Pierce even offered to go under hypnosis, but nothing came up from that either. I mean, why would you be offering to do, like, hypnosis and stuff if you did?
Like, why would you do that stuff if you were guilty?
You would have no control over yourself.
Maybe, I guess, if you say it and believe it.
Yeah.
It's still...
No. So, on August 6th, 1999... Johnson delivered a 4-hour presentation about their investigated plan to presume Maurice Pierce. It started with the girlfriend Yes, that's what it says.
Okay.
That's what I was told. It started with the girlfriend that Rob Springsteen had for 3 weeks in 1991. Kelly Hannah. Great name, by the way. just so weird. The names get weirder, though.
Amazing.
The names get weirder later, trust me.
Okay, they're texting people.
So, during her interrogation, she said she knew Rob hung out in that area and said she thought it was weird that he hadn't seen something that night, such as fire trucks. Detective asks if what she meant by seeing something she really meant involved in.
Oh.
Police began to hint that maybe she was a suspect.
Dang!
Yeah, they were desperate at this point. So they asked her which out of the three boys, Rob, Mike, or Forrest, who would be most likely to talk to them about Maurice Pierce. She tells them Mike Scott, or, you know, Michael Scott. I think that's such a great name. On September 9th, So on September 9th, 1999, Scott was questioned for 12 hours.
God.
Eventually, he said he knew the identities of the killer. He told his wife during a phone call at the station that night he knew more about the case than he thought he knew, which is really weird because he came in not knowing much about anything. But then, 12 hours later, he suddenly knew all these details.
Damn.
A little weird. So they continued the interrogation the next day. At one point, the detective brings in a revolver into the room to, quote-unquote, help Scott remember what he did.
What?
The detective then walks up behind him and puts the gun to his head.
What?
The cops say it wasn't a gun. It was just him pretending to have a gun, with, a handgun.
What?
But Scott finally admits that he had shot one of the girls. A few days later, A few days later, Scott said he remembered seeing Pierce with one of the girls in a separate room at the yogurt shop. He said he thought he had gagged one of the girls with the paper towels or napkins, which is incorrect, remember?
Yes.
They've been gagged with their clothing.
Yes.
He also said the 22 came from Rob Springsteen. At the restart, do I?
Oh, I don't think so. Okay. That was suspicious.
It did save everything.
I really hope.
I know, if not, I'll cry. Anyway, so.
I know. Okay, let me check. I think we just gave ourselves heart attacks.
Yeah, that was terrifying. Okay, let's continue.
We had some technical difficulties. My phone shut off for a minute there.
Anyways, he also said that the 22 came from Rob Springsteen, which is not true. It came from Pierce, remember?
Yeah.
He was the one found with it. But he said it came from Rob Springsteen, and he couldn't remember much about the weapon, but he said it was a semi-automatic 38. It was actually a 380, which is a much smaller
one. Maybe he just doesn't know his guns.
I don't know. So remember, they were also quite stupid.
Oh. Okay.
Anyway, so at this point,
real downhill.
I'm just being honest.
Yeah, brutally.
Well, yeah, that's kind of my thing.
Yeah.
At this point, the case was up to 50 confessions.
Oh.
Including God. 6 written statements.
Okay, this is at this point not even. These guys.
The new detectives on the case were only worried about this one given after 20 hours of interrogation, filled with inconsistencies and incorrect details from a guy who wasn't that bright and had repeated the 10th grade, had to repeat the 10th grade before eventually dropping out of high school.
Okay.
So the only reason police even knew about him was because Forrest had told him they all went to San Antonio that night. So it's all Forrest's fault.
It's all Forrest's fault?
Yeah, I guess so.
All his fault.
Not necessarily. I'm just making a joke here.
Yeah, I'm aware.
I don't know whose fault it was.
It was Licorice's.
Sure. Yeah. The police then talked to Rob Springsteen, who at this point was living in West Virginia. What? Sorry, I'm not a Virginia fan. Anything to do with Virginia.
Home, my Alabama.
That's Alabama, Jocelyn.
Yeah, I know.
So, after a long, intense interrogation, he confesses to sexually assaulting and killing Amy Ayers.
Okay.
But, we'll get into that later. Remember
his confession. Can they not find DNA?
It was different back then. It was 1991. Yeah, so you but couldn't really. You'll see. I'll show you. I'll tell you. He got some details. I got some of the details right. Like, where her body was and the gun, but those details were known to everyone.
Just enough.
Those details were known to everyone, though.
Yeah.
So they also questioned Pierce and Forrest. Forrest said they tried to tell him what to say, but no matter how hard they tried, he would not say he did it. So the Austin Police Department announced that they had charged 4 men with the murders of Jennifer, Eliza, Sarah, and Amy. Pretty bold statement right there.
Yeah.
Because that's not true at all. They could never get a confession out of Maurice Pierce or Forrest Wellborn, and the charges had to be dropped when a grand jury failed to indict them, which is very rare. You basically have to have no evidence not to get an indictment.
Yeah.
And the only thing that they had were the tape confessions of Rob Springsteen and Mike Scott, who did not implicate Pierce or Forrest in their confessions. They did, however, indict Rob Springsteen and Mike Scott because they confessed, but they also had 50 other confessions that all included details of the crime.
Dang.
The police were convinced that Pierce was like the ringleader since he owned the gun. But, you know, he didn't get arrested or anything.
He was like a chaos causer. That's him.
Anyway, so Rob and Mike were both tried separately, and during their trials, both confession tapes were played.
Oh.
Their confessions were used against each other, but they were never called as a witness. And, you know, that's, like, I don't remember the exact law, but that's in the Constitution. You know, you're, like...
Yeah.
So anyway, that does really, that helps them out later. They were both found guilty based solely on their confession tapes. No other evidence.
That's almost...
Hold on.
It keeps deleting.
Okay, so... also, they also had a few witnesses who said they couldn't identify Robert Mike as the person they saw in the yogurt shop.
Okay.
So, they also had some friends come up, and yeah, they said that they had told them they did it. They had killed the girls.
Dang.
Rob was given a death sentence, but later commuted to a life sentence. And Mike's jury could not agree on the death penalty, so he received life in prison.
Okay.
In June of 2009, they were released while pending their next trial. This happened because, like I said, things were unconstitutional during their trial.
Yeah.
So, Rob had, only, had been on death row for nearly 10 years at this point.
Oh.
So, Mike's confession did not match the original arson investigator's report about how the fire started. The original report said the fire started on a shelf on the back wall.
Oh.
Mike's confession said they lit the girls on fire, you know, with, like, napkins and other mm-hmm. stuff on them. A new report was filed, and the new report matched his confession perfectly. They changed it.
Oh.
Which is so messed up. There were a lot of details Mike got wrong. For example, the killers did not enter the office, but Scott claims they did. The new...
Wait, what?
Yeah, he said that the killer, they went in the office... But okay, they knew the killers didn't enter the office because the door was locked and they had to find a key to unlock it.
Okay.
Weird. There were also words he used, like, I can't remember it, but it was, like, you know, big words for him. He's, you know, he's not stupid.
The brightest.
Or
we could say that.
I'm just being honest, brutally. And they knew he most likely would not know them. It was also a cop term. I mean, I had never heard this. I'm sure you would never. I don't even remember what it was, but I have no idea. I cannot remember. And since it was a written statement, so it seemed like he was copying something someone was telling him to write. So, Rob had a lawyer. Here's the name. Are you ready?
No.
Joe Jim Sawyer.
Joe Jim. Jim from Texas.
Who named someone Joe Jim? Yo, Joe Jim.
I do. I name myself.
He asked the questions of... What differentiates? Yes, Rob and Mike's statements from the 50 other confessions.
Me.
So this is where it really. I do not think that the four guys did it. In my opinion,
I don't know.
Especially at this point, the DA did a new DNA test. Considering, you know, things are more advanced. What year did this? I don't know. Oh, it's 2009. Sorry.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, now it's now 2009. Remember, this happened in 1991.
Yeah.
So, guess what came up in the DNA test?
Not the right DNA?
Yeah. It was nothing. I mean, it was not them.
Like, wow. What more proof do you need here?
You know? So they said they're, you know what they said, because it didn't match them? You know what they said?
Oh, well.
They said there had to have been a fifth guy.
Oh, like, my God. Okay, heck? Give it up.
Yeah, look at other suspects. Like, oh my God, stop making up a whole other person.
Yeah, like, there was another guy.
Like, don't you think he would have been,
I mean, there could have been. But yeah, but why didn't they mention him? If they're all going they're probably all going down together.
Exactly. That's what I would have said. You know, if I'm going down, you're going down with me, man.
Yeah. Like, well, I'm kidding.
So this would also make part of Rob's confession false.
Yeah.
And because, you know, he had admitted, you know, doing these things, and it would have, it contradicts it. But
yeah.
They still tried to blame the crime on them after all of this. Like, oh my God.
Well, they're like, give it up. They're just booty heads.
They have 50 other confessions.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Go check one of those guys.
Yeah. And so in 2017, they found a match to the DNA. Not an exact person, but, you know, like, general like a family idea. Member. So in February, they sent a request to the FBI to turn over the information, but I don't think they have. There is a theory that actually does make a lot of sense. The serial killer that I mentioned, Kenneth McDuff, which I actually really want to do because it's very interesting, it mentions that maybe he was behind it. You know, not him directly. Maybe.
Yeah.
Not him directly, but he had quote-unquote accomplices, you know, like groupies.
Uh-huh.
It could have been one of them. Probably the guys that were there before closing, you know, sitting in the booth.
Yeah.
Maybe they did it to impress the killer. But we don't know. Maybe we'll one day, but...
Maybe we'll know soon. Because it takes about 3 or 4 years to go through.
Mm-hmm. So, the yogurt shop is now a beauty bar. There's a plaque hung to remember the girls.
Yeah.
The people that run the beauty bar light incense for the girls every day, wanting to remember them, saying, hoping that if they remember the girls, people will remember them when they die. Which is just the sweetest thing I've ever heard. I know.
It's so anyways, sweet. Now I'm so gonna go cry.
That.
Thank you guys for listening.
That
was really sweet. All right, bye. I'm not gonna delete it.
Please don't.